It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right. Welcome back to Money for Lunch. Man, it's so exciting to have you here. You know, this week I've been talking a lot about decisions. The world, your business, our lives, whatever, all revolve around the quality of our decisions. And what it really comes down to, if you will, is that, look, our decisions are based on what we focus on. Or what should we focus on? For example, you wake up first thing in the morning and you're focused on getting to the gym. And you're going to make certain decisions and have certain feelings based on what you're focusing on. Now, if the first thing in the morning you wake up and you're focused on things you can't control, these terrible shootings that we've been having, ISIS, the world economy, that's probably going to be very demotivating. And you're not going to take the same type of action. You're not going to feel the same way. I'm a huge believer. How we feel is more important than what we know. Have you ever felt as though you could accomplish a goal? You just got excited about it. You set a goal. You didn't know how you were going to achieve it. You really have no logical reason to achieve it, but you felt as though it was right. And so you focused on that. And, you know, it happens. Things happen. So first thing is, what am I going to focus on, or what should I focus on? Determines what decisions you'll make. It determines the quality of your decisions. Also, what does this mean is a great question. So if the first thing you got up in the morning, you say, hey, I'm going to hit the gym. And for a lot of us, it's kind of autopilot. I love getting up, being in the gym. First thing I want to do. What does this mean to me? Man, it means that I'm taking care of myself. I'm spending some quality time with myself. I'm giving myself the energy I need to accomplish the rest of my goals. And then the third element of a decision, I think, is what should I do? So you get up, you're thinking quality time with yourself, you're thinking fitness, you're thinking I got to get in the gym. What do? You go to the gym. And maybe maybe since it's already automatic for you, you're thinking, what should I focus on to improve my cardiovascular? So maybe you're going to do some sprints. What does this mean? Well, if my cardiovascular fitness is elevated, I can be a better speaker. I'm a better mom or dad because I have more energy. So you get to the, so think about this. It's these three elements. What should I focus on? What does this mean? What should I do? So let's say that you get to the office and you're being bombarded by all sorts of different possibilities. What should I focus on should be determined by what your goals are. Not for the day. It's not a to-do list, but what are your goals? So if your goal is to double your sales for this year, then really need to focus where your sales are at right now. What do I need to do to meet my goals? And what does this mean? Well, this means that if I can move this needle forward, if I can hire one more salesperson, if I can train my people better, then I'm going to move forward with this goal. I'm going to achieve my goal of doubling my sales. What should I do? How am I going to double my sales? What do I need to do? Maybe I need to spend more time on LinkedIn. Maybe I need to find out how I can be a better prospector, how I can train my people to be better at prospecting. And LinkedIn is a pretty good source for that. I say this because it's my really nice way of dovetailing, segueing into my first guest, Viveka von Rosen. She's internationally known LinkedIn expert. She's been on the show a couple of times. She's author of LinkedIn Marketing, An Hour a Day, Forbes recognized social media influencer, founder of LinkedIn to Business, and the LinkedIn chat on Twitter. Viveka von Rosen, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Thank you so much. It is a pleasure to be here.
Did you like my segue there?
I did like that segue. I was very impressed. I was like, I believe everything he's talking about, and absolutely, you know, you create where your attention goes, but how is he going to segue this into LinkedIn? So that was really well done.
Oh, yeah, I appreciate that. Well, all right, so let's talk about LinkedIn. Tell us a little bit about your story. How long have you been an active member of LinkedIn?
So I've been active on LinkedIn for about 12 years, 11 years, I guess, it's 2016, and then actively teaching and training on it for 10 years, and then it's been my full-time job for the past 9 years. So I am pretty much all about LinkedIn all the time. I only do LinkedIn and LinkedIn training and LinkedIn consulting. So, I pretty much live and breathe LinkedIn. So the latest news was a bit of a shocker.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. Microsoft buys out LinkedIn for $26 billion cash. Were you as surprised as I was?
Yeah. You know, actually, I've got a Silicon Valley insider who said, you know, keep your eyes open because these three companies are actively interested in researching LinkedIn right now, and Microsoft was one of them. But honestly, the three companies that were actively researching LinkedIn, Microsoft was the last one I thought would buy it. In retrospect, having done a lot of reading over the past week, been on a lot of interviews over the past week, it's now starting to make sense. But a week ago, I was completely in shock, I have to say.
Yes, I was too. I mean, I think once you start looking at it, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, if you are a company like Microsoft where you have so many enterprise-related type of products, buying LinkedIn makes a lot of sense. I think that also one of the things that I thought was really smart about this is that it wasn't Microsoft buying it with stock. And I think one of the reasons that they did that is because, rules and regulations would have slowed things down. And once the cat was out of the bag, you would have had other suitors going after LinkedIn. I think they said, hey, how much do you want? $26 billion. Here's a check. And it was just like, let's just get it over with. Let's do it as fast as possible. And then you look at what Microsoft has to offer. It makes a lot of sense. It's a great way for Microsoft to take somebody like a small startup who is just now entering the business world, and he's coming into LinkedIn. He can know about Microsoft products, and as that individual member grows, maybe he's going to become a manager or later on a VP or CEO or whatever. He's going to know over and over again about Microsoft products. And overall, you know, bottom line, smart move. Ultimately,
smart move.
Yes.
Yeah, really. Yeah. You know, when you look at customer acquisition costs, you know, after you do all the math and you take out the, you know, the tax breaks and whatever all else there is in the final cost of LinkedIn, you're looking at like $30 customer acquisition cost per member, which is dirt cheap, especially as you said, that is their ideal client consumer. That is, I mean, if you were to create a purchaser persona, it might as well just say LinkedIn member, right, for Microsoft.
Exactly.
So it was actually extremely smart move.
It was, and I'm glad you broke it down to cost per acquisition, $30, nothing. I have worked with clients where they're paying upwards of $200 or $300 to acquire one customer. You know, and spending $30-$40 to acquire a lead. So I think it's such a smart move for Microsoft, and I think that Microsoft they're a little late to the game, but they finally woke up and realized that it's the traffic that is so valuable. Mm-hmm. The membership that LinkedIn has, you know, I think they're finally starting to wake up to that because they missed out on buying, you know, things like WhatsApp. They missed out on buying, what do you call it, some of these other things that were up for sale. They bought out, World of Warcraft.
Yammer. Oh, yeah, 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 exactly.
And Yammer, thank you, yeah. And I think they finally realized, hey, you know what, we better start collecting names. We better start getting on this whole traffic name thing because I think this internet may stay around.
What a concept. You know, and here's, I think, I'm glad you brought that up too. I think LinkedIn has dropped the ball a little bit in the past couple of years with its leadership as far as promoting and supporting the free membership. They're all about the paid members right now, and they're really all about the enterprise members. But honestly, it is still the free membership that makes LinkedIn, or that gives LinkedIn its value, maybe not in its dollar signs, but gives LinkedIn its value. And I'm glad that Microsoft recognized that, and I'm glad, or at least I hope, that Microsoft bought LinkedIn because of its membership, not just because of, you know, its yearly gross income, right? So, and the thing is, Microsoft has, it's just such a perfect marriage because Microsoft has a whole bunch of really cool features and businesses that it's acquired that it can integrate into LinkedIn. But LinkedIn brings that social networking, that business networking feature that really, you know, that Microsoft failed when they bought Yammer. It didn't work for them. And so now they can repurpose all of this cool stuff like their CRM and like Yammer and like Skype and be able to integrate it into LinkedIn and bring LinkedIn back to the gloryful tool that it was, say, 3 or 4 years ago.
Yes, absolutely. And this is something I also want to talk about, that a lot of these acquisitions that we see, and I'm not just picking on Microsoft, but in general, acquisitions are tough to make work.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is because typically the acquiring company comes in and they disrupt a system that's already working.
Right.
If you take a lesson from Warren Buffett, he doesn't do any of that. He just acquires the company and leaves them completely alone.
Exactly.
And he's got like a 98% success rate with all his acquisitions. And if you look at the mergers and acquisitions history, I want to say it's an 80% failure rate.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is that they want to come in there and they want to goof around and they want to, hey, you know, we're going to take Kinko's and we're going to change it from Kinko's to FedEx Kinko's and we're going to change all this. And you take a multi-billion dollar acquisition and all of a sudden within a couple of years, it is worthless.
Right. And that was the big fear. I mean, that was my big fear. And certainly that was the chatter around my LinkedIn communities was, oh, my God, Microsoft's going to just envelop and squish and transform LinkedIn into yet another, you know, Microsoft tool, membership subscription tool. But Skype, you know, when I said to people, well, Skype's really, there's more ads, whatever. But Skype has not changed much at all. It's a little bit more, it actually works a little bit better now. And I'd have people go, Microsoft bought Skype? So the fact that they purchased Skype, acquired Skype, and didn't really change Skype, and that people don't even realize that Microsoft purchased Skype, that to me, that gave me a little bit of a breath of relief that, okay, maybe they're going to, and of course they said they're going to allow LinkedIn to remain its own brand and remain its own product. But I had that reaction most definitely when I first heard about it.
Yes, absolutely. And I did too. You know, the reality is that Microsoft, again, most companies that acquire other companies, they are not, their egos just won't leave it alone. And I think for LinkedIn to be successful, it has to kind of be left alone. It has to be LinkedIn, and somewhere underneath the word LinkedIn, you could put a Microsoft company, but you know, that's really that's all you need to do. And then, of course, you got to leave the same infrastructure, the same C-suite in there, and just continue to grow it. Let's talk about this a little bit. Back to your area of expertise, your core is LinkedIn, and so if I am a B2B consultant, how can I use LinkedIn to grow my lead flow, my prospecting, other than running a LinkedIn ad?
Right, exactly, which don't work very well anyway, unless you have a huge budget. So with LinkedIn, and, you know, it's always been about creating relationships. That's always been part of the tagline somewhere. And that truly is what it's about. You know, where LinkedIn excels beyond Outlook, say, is that you have the opportunity of finding, connecting to, and engaging with people who are not directly, you know, in your CRM, in your customer relationship management tool. They're not in your calendar. They're not in your phone book. And so the ability of just being able to use LinkedIn's advanced search to find those individuals and then seeing how you're connected to them. Do you have someone in common? Have you worked at the same company in the past, maybe? Have you lived in the same town? Are you members of the same groups? Like, LinkedIn will actually tell you what you have in common. It's literally called in common on their profile with your prospect. That gives you something to talk about. Added to the fact that LinkedIn messages, even though I'm not a huge fan of the new messenger feature, but LinkedIn messages still have a higher open rate than, say, an email from a complete stranger. And the fact that you can say, you know, we both know John Smith. I noticed that you do this, this, and this, and we've shared this, this, and this, and I saw you mentioned this on Twitter the other day, and I really liked the article you shared. You know, was wondering if you'd be willing to, you know, set up a phone call with me if you use an InMail to say that, or was wondering if you'd be willing to connect with me if you use an invitation, or, you know, was hoping you'd be willing to talk to me if you use an introduction. There are all these free tools. Well, InMail's not free, but there are several free tools that you can use not only to identify your key prospects, but actually start the conversation with those key prospects. And then it's just a matter of managing that prospect base. That's where I help, you know, that they maybe integrate the Microsoft Dynamics CRM into LinkedIn so that we have a better customer relationship management tool than we have right now in Sales Navigator. But, you know, but really, whether you use premium or free, it's all about finding, connecting to, engaging, and then really starting the conversation and continuing the conversation with your prospects. And you've got just such a great research tool naturally embedded within LinkedIn. It is absolutely, I think, one of the best tools, or the best tool, for creating business relationships, especially for the B2B world, but certainly B2C as well.
Yes, absolutely. And I want to emphasize this. You hit the key word there. Whether you're using LinkedIn or Facebook or direct mail or cold calling or whatever, it comes down to that relationship. LinkedIn might give you, as you said, maybe a better open rate. In other words, people are going to say, "Oh, okay, this is so and so from LinkedIn. I'll give them an additional glance. I'll give them a chance that maybe I wouldn't give a complete utter stranger." But
right.
Bottom line is, it's about that relationship.
Exactly. You know, it's like they say, all things being equal, it's like not like they, it's what Bob Berg says, all things being equal, people do business with people they know, like, and trust. This is your first opportunity to get people to know, like, and trust you.
Yes, absolutely. So let's talk about that. How do I get people on LinkedIn to get to know, like, and trust me? What should I do? What should not I do? Yeah, what shouldn't I do?
Which you should not, I do. Yeah, so let's start with what not to do.
Okay.
You don't go in with the sales pitch, right? It's like, don't ask someone home before you buy them a drink. Don't start off with the sales pitch before they have an idea of who you are. And that's where I think the biggest mistake, people get access to Sales Navigator and they get these 50 in-mails with Sales Navigator, or even the 15 with the basic premium account, and they're like, buy my stuff, and people are like, why would I? I don't know you.
Right.
So really, right. Ideally, so that's what not to do. What to do is to build up that sense of know, like, and trust by disseminating, by sharing, by sending your ideal prospects the information that they will find helpful and useful which may or may not even be something that you've written. It may or may not even be something from your company or about your company. You might know, though, that if your ideal prospect is a female lawyer in New York City, you might know that she is frustrated with the commute and needs some safe paths to work. Well, you happen to have a product, yes, that, I don't know, it's something that she can clip on her purse, but you're not going to go in and sell that to her. What you're going to do is identify that, yes, as a female lawyer, you know, commuting to work, this is probably an issue. Here's a great app on which subway routes are safest. Here's a great article on, you know, things to make sure you have on your purse on your commute. And, oh, yeah, by the way, we sell this really cool little app. You can buy it here for $14. But the first, you know, the first items are things that she will find of interest that she needs on her commute. And, oh, yeah, by the way, there's this too. So whether you're sending that as an update, as a paid advertising, you're writing about that in a LinkedIn published post, which is like your blog post on LinkedIn, or you're just sharing it as an update, the more focused you can get on who your ideal client is, what their needs are, and how you can help solve those needs, and sharing helpful, useful information to help solve those needs, and, oh, yeah, by the way, we do this too, the more luck you are you're going to have in creating that sense of know, like, and trust. Because, first of all, people are going to see your picture and your name. And they might not even know why. They're like, that Vivica chick, oh, who is she? I, gosh, that name's familiar. That might be enough to get them to open up the next letter that I send, right? Just the fact that I share helpful, useful information, in my case about LinkedIn, very, very regularly, maybe too much. And then follow up maybe with a private message with, again, leading with helpful, useful information, checklists, white papers, articles, following up with, oh, yeah, and I do LinkedIn consulting too. So just creating that top-of-mind awareness through the very many different ways that you can use a LinkedIn platform as far as content creation and curation, just those activities, which are all free except for the paid ads, all build top-of-mind awareness around my name. That builds a sense of know, maybe, hopefully, like, but eventually, and more importantly, trust, and that's where the conversion then happens. That's where I'm able to say, hey, you know, I noticed that you're doing great on Publisher. There are a couple changes that you can make. You know, would you be open to a 15-minute call? In that 15-minute call, I give them the different strategies that they can implement, and hopefully by the end of that call, the very light, delicate sales pitch where they hire me then to do that for all of their company. But it's just those baby steps. Eating the elephant one bite at a time, right? Just a little bit of activity every day on LinkedIn will help to build that sense of awareness around who you are and what you offer.
I love it. I love it. And I also want to emphasize this. You mentioned, you know that your ideal client is, and then you said, you know, this female lawyer who commutes. If you know that kind of information about your ideal client, then you can, as you mentioned, tailor information for that individual. I just wanted to reemphasize that, because if you send somebody a whatever, hey, you know, here is a shortcut to make your commute go faster, that'll probably catch their attention. Again, you're not telling them anything. You're just saying, look, I know who you are. I know some of your things that are bothering you. By the way, check out this latest article on how to make your commute go faster. And it's going to get an open, it'll be open. It'll probably be read. And as you mentioned, you start to build that top of mind awareness. And they're going to know, yes, man, this is the person who gives me all these great tips on shortcuts on my commute. And so then from there, maybe it springboards into a client, or you never know. I mean, I've gotten referrals from LinkedIn, people who've not ever done business with me, but they've referred me and I got a speaking gig out of it. So you just never know, but you're building that relationship.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And it's not just LinkedIn, of course. But how can you blend LinkedIn with what you're already doing if you've got a podcast, with what you're already doing if you're active on Facebook? You know, whatever it is that you do to market yourself, add LinkedIn as an ingredient, blend those strategies together, and that really can help catapult you into having more lead generation success. There's no reason to think of LinkedIn as a completely opposite and separate structure than, say, your face-to-face networking that you're doing. You're just bringing LinkedIn in to, you know, to massage and soften up and warm up those leads. So when you go to the live networking event, there's face and name recognition, which, quite
yes.
frankly, never mind your prospect, it makes me feel more comfortable. The more comfortable I
yes.
am, right, the better the conversation's going to go.
Absolutely. Vivica Von Rosen, we're out of time. Always good to have you. Looking forward to have you back again and talk about LinkedIn. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks a lot.
You bet. Good stuff there about LinkedIn from Vivica Von Rosen. And we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
We are back. Good show so far. I'm excited for my next guest, Charles Fishman. Charles Fishman is an award-winning investigative and magazine journalist, a New York Times best-selling author. A year ago, his latest book, A Curious Mind, co-authored with Hollywood producer Brian Grazer, started a whole new conversation in the U.S. about the power of curiosity to reinvigorate education, to help people be better bosses and employees, even to bring freshness to your personal relationship. A Curious Mind landed on the New York Times bestselling list the first week out and eventually hit number one. Charles Fishman, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thanks for having me. I like Money for Lunch. The radio show and the literal expression.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. You know, you get let's say, people like yourself or Brian or other entrepreneurial spirits together for lunch, and sooner or later, you know, we're talking about ideas, and these ideas always seem to eventually hit on not only the public that we can serve, but, you know, the money that we can make. So money for lunch.
I hope so.
Oh, man. So, yeah, so this is really good. I mean, I'm excited to have you here. I also want to say this. You're the author of two previous bestsellers, The Big Thirst, The Secret Life and Turbulent Future of Water, has changed the way people think about and manage water. That was a big deal. And then I think you had another book, The Walmart Effect, How the World's Biggest Company Really Works, is another best-selling book. Those are some major accomplishments. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. No one ever talks about them that way exactly, but yes. And I've had a good time. I mean, we're going to talk about curiosity, but that's what drives my work. I was curious about how Walmart became not just the biggest store in America or the biggest store in the world, or the biggest company in the world, but the biggest company in the history of the world. All they do is sell stuff, right? They're not Google, they're not Apple, they didn't create anything. And just asking that question, what makes Walmart different than Target or Kmart or Safeway or, you know, Vons, led to an incredible journey. And that's I'm a big fan of what you might colloquially call the stupid question, because sometimes the stupid question asked with a whole heart sort of cracks open the world.
Absolutely, absolutely. Matter of fact, since you said that, one of my favorite things to do is to ask the question I already know the answer to, but when you ask that question to different people, you get a slightly different answer. You get an additional nuance or maybe an additional story to that answer that makes that story bigger, better, brighter.
Well, it's what it sometimes shows you, again, if you ask a question you think you know the answer to with a whole heart, with sincerity, so the person you're talking to doesn't know that you already know the answer, you sometimes discover that you don't know the answer.
Yes.
You sometimes get you are often surprised. I mean, one of the things that I have really come to appreciate about being a reporter is that most things are much more complicated than they look. And when not to harp on Walmart, but you walk into Walmart and you look around and you think, how hard could this be, right? But I mean, it's just toothpaste and deodorant on the shelf, man. Well, Walmart revolutionized the world. And in fact,
yes,
my book about water is the same way. The DNA molecule has millions and millions of working parts. Water has three. And water is actually the most important substance in the world, despite its apparent simplicity. It structurally, it is, in fact, simple. And so asking really simple questions often takes you on a great journey. We're off in the weeds now, especially if you're a reporter, it does, or you're a sometime radio host, it does.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely. And you're absolutely right. Look, having said looked at it all, water is the most precious commodity that we have. It is the life force. And there is a large percentage of the world that is struggling to have drinkable water, and including California, which may or may not have a drought, depending on whether or not you believe Donald Trump. So the thing that we take for granted, water, is the way we harvest water or the way that we get water is going to be changing in the next couple of years because we're running out in parts of the world.
Well, it's absolutely. And even asking the question, why do we take water for granted, is in and of itself an interesting question, because it is so – you can't do anything. You can't make your way to noon without water, most people in the world. And so since it's so important, why don't we value it more highly? Why don't we pay more attention to it? And those are all really wonderful questions that I sort of had a great time unpacking. The funny thing about water, I only paid attention to water after we checked into a hotel when we were on vacation, and there was a bottle of Fiji water in the hotel room. And I literally said to my wife, do you think the water in that bottle actually comes from Fiji? And in fact, my wife drank the water. We happened to have just driven from one side of the country to the other, so she wanted the water, even though the bottle of Fiji water cost $7. But I threw the empty Fiji water bottle in my suitcase and took it home. I still have it three moves later because that bottle changed my life. It turns out most people can't believe this, but the water in the Fiji water bottle comes from the island nation of Fiji, which is, literally an 11-hour plane flight from Los Angeles. And I was so amazed at that. And then it turned out that half the people in Fiji don't have clean, safe drinking water. So I just took the bottle home. I did a little bit of research when I got back to my desk. And to me, being a reporter is all about asking questions and then listening to the answers and then asking the next question that the answer sort of provokes. Okay, the water is really from Fiji. Why would Fiji send its water all the way across the Pacific Ocean to, Orlando and Portland and Dallas? And then you find out that half the people in Fiji don't have clean, safe drinking water. So they export a product to America where it is easier for us to get that product than it is for the people who live in Fiji to get it. So then I went to Fiji. Then I had to go to Fiji to figure out what the answer to all those questions was.
Well, now I'm curious. I mean, you can't leave it hanging that. Why is it that they're exporting water when they're not – when what did you say? Half of them don't have suitable drinking water?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what's funny? This is what's powerful about curiosity, and I think important to remember in the age of Google, which is showing up in person often changes completely how you understand a person or a place or a situation. And in an era when all our kids have more information with the flick of a few fingers than we had after 2 hours in the library, when you can watch videos that teach you how to repair your car or get the ticks off your dog or anything, you can lose sight of how valuable it is to show up. So I went to Fiji, and I wasn't really sure what I imagined I would find. I just thought, this couldn't be more ridiculous. Why does a nation that doesn't have enough clean water for its people send its clean water, its best water, in shipping containers to a nation where the toilets have perfectly clean, safe drinking water, right? Our toilets have better water than half the people in the world. And what you discover when you get to Fiji is that when you look at the whole equation from the other side, Fiji water is the most important business in the whole country. It's a small country, 650,000 people, and Fiji water generates $130 million in revenue a year, and that makes it the largest business by far in the whole country. And so the best 400 jobs in the country are working for the company that bottles and ships out to Fiji water, and the most skilled truck mechanics maintain the Fiji water trucks, and people who work in the factory learn to manage and handle high-tech equipment. And from their perspective, it's like, we got a lot of other stuff we're not doing that much with. Would you like us to pack it up and send it to you, and you could send us a lot of money? from their perspective, it's like, those crazy Americans want our water? Okay, let's send it to them. And so it looks much less ridiculous when you get to Fiji. There, it's really clearly a powerful engine for both the economy and for the people who work for Fiji Water to learn what the global economy is about and what kind of skills you need. And in the meantime, the government of Fiji is responsible for whether half the people in Fiji have water or not. You know what I mean? And that's, so there is an irony there, but Fiji water isn't, the reason half the people in Fiji don't have water is not because of Fiji water. So it's silly, it's ridiculous. I'm somebody who thinks that buying bottled water from Italy or from Fiji or from Iceland is absurd, but people will do what they want. And the truth is that the good news is that in Fiji, it has an absolutely wonderful impact. And so that's the part of the power of curiosity. Part of what Brian and I were trying to get people to understand is that you have asking questions all day long is important, but you have to listen to the answer, and you have to be prepared for the answer to not be what you'd expect. Otherwise, there's no point in asking the question. And so that was a case where I made my way all the way to Fiji through the expense account of Fast Company magazine. And when I got to Fiji, I found a much more complicated and interesting story than you ever would have imagined.
I love it. I love it. And I think that's a great example of a curious mind. It's here you are. You picked up this Fiji bottle in your hotel room. You paid three or four times, what it sells for in the store, because you got it. We got a part of the hotel bar there, right?
Exactly.
What I thought was interesting is that it obviously connected with you, And here you are, instead of throwing away the plastic bottle, you kept it, and you've now kept it, as you said, three moves later, and because it obviously stirred this big question. You had to know. Your curiosity would not let that question go. And the book, again, that we're talking about today is A Curious Mind, The Secret to a Bigger Life by Brian Grazer and Charles Fishman. Charles Fishman is here with us today. We had Brian here, a while back. I can't remember it, but it's been 4 or 5 months. But this is a great read because it is probably – you guys sat down and you guys had Oprah Winfrey, which is an interesting interview or talk. Let's see, another one of my favorite ones is this Veronica De Negri.
Veronica De Negri, yeah.
Yes, which I thought was just beyond, oh my gosh, it's gut-wrenching. This trip to Cuba where you guys, had this encounter with Fidel Castro. The book is chock full of the world's biggest names.
Well, Brian practices something he calls curiosity conversations, where he has made personally a practice of trying to meet with someone outside the movie business once a week. Now, I'm a reporter, so I'm working on a book now on the race to the moon, and I spent an hour on the phone this morning with a guy who helped design and build the lunar module. So that I've had my curiosity conversation already for this morning. But Brian sort of understood early on, excuse me, I want to cough, that the movie business, which he loves, and the movie and TV business, is very kind of insular. And so before he was famous, before he had produced Apollo 13 or Beautiful Mind or Friday Night Lights, when he was just a young man, he started making an effort to sit down and have conversations with people, really almost journalistic interviews. He just didn't write anything about them, who were outside the world of the movies. And so, when he was getting divorced, he met Oprah. She came to lunch. My favorite element of that story is that she came to lunch by the pool in her pajamas. I guess you have to have a lot of confidence to meet somebody for lunch by the pool in your pajamas. Veronica De Negri, who was tortured and who really sort of changed Brian's view of what it means to be a prisoner and to sort of lose your human agency. But Brian has met 3 CIA directors. He's met a bunch of people from the Mossad. He loved interviewing, for some reason, tattoo artists and surfers. Where do you get your focus? Where do you get your inspiration? And so he has made curiosity a tool for coming up with ideas for the creative part of his life. Now, he doesn't sit down with Oprah and say to himself, okay, this is Oprah. I have to come away from sitting down with Oprah for an hour with 3, TV show ideas. It doesn't work that way at all. As Brian says, and I think this is perfect, we do have Steve Jobs. We did have Thomas Edison. We did have Henry Ford. But you're not Steve Jobs or Thomas Edison or Henry Ford. And so the question is, how can you be creative if you're not a pure creative genius? And the answer is, ask questions and listen to the answers and pay attention. As Brian says, I may not have the idea myself immediately, but I know good ideas when I hear them. And that is in of itself a talent. And, of course, really what happens is you talk to 30 people over the course of a month or a year, and all of what they say, whether they're from the world of medicine or surfing or tattoo design, eventually you come up with something interesting because that stuff sort of percolates in your own brain. And too many of us live just in our little worlds. We never break out. I love one of the things Brian suggested, and I thought this was just pure genius. Brian said you should, if you work in an organization or a company, you should make an effort to meet one new person a day for 30 work days in your own company, just somebody you don't know.
Mm.
Just meet them, 10 minutes, here's who I am, who are you, what do you do? He said the power of that is incredible. First of all, you realize how big the organization is, how many people you don't know, even inside your own company, let alone in adjacent industries or things that have nothing to do with what you do. And second of all, you just create this instant network of allies that's built on nothing but respect and familiarity. You know, then you go to a meeting and all of a sudden Susan or Ed or Joseph is there and you took the trouble 2 months ago just to say hi at lunch and, you know, let me introduce myself. It just that simple exercise, which is almost basic curiosity, is incredibly powerful. And then you take that to the next level, and you really start to open up the possibilities for creativity.
Yes. No, I love it. Look, it's so interesting what you're saying there, because all of us spend a lot of time in our own heads asking questions. A lot of us spend our time asking the same question over and over again in our own heads. What I love about a curious mind, the philosophy behind a curious mind, as you just expressed, is go out there and get out of your own comfort zone, get out of your own area of expertise or whatever. I mean, to go out there and start meeting people that you've never met and just become naturally curious. You know, if you know, it's completely different.
And you don't have
different.
To have the key is you don't have to have an agenda, and you shouldn't have an agenda.
Right. Right.
People, the secret that reporters know and that Brian has sort of discovered is, you know, Brian was a junior movie executive. He was nobody. And in fact, Brian is legendary in Hollywood, but the average person in Texas or Indiana or Florida hasn't heard of Brian. They've heard of his movies. But Brian
right.
would pick up the phone and say, hey, this is who I am. This is what I do. Would you mind talking to me about, you know, atomic physics? Would you mind talking to me about national security? And the secret that he uncovered, as I said, and that reporters know, is that people enjoy explaining what they do and how they do it and what it means to be good at what they do, whether they're a hairdresser or a real estate agent or a research scientist or an oncologist. People appreciate the implied respect of you asking them about themselves and then listening to the answer, and you never know. I mean, you do this all the time, Bert. You never know what you're going to discover when you start talking to people.
Absolutely. And here's the other thing. I've had the pleasure now of interviewing, I don't know, literally thousands of people, Charles, and including you and Brian and stuff like that. People that I never would have had a chance to bump into. I mean, where do you live? Are you in L.A. or New York? I don't remember.
I'm in Washington.
Oh, you're in Washington. So here
well,
I am in
you?
Phoenix. I'm in Phoenix.
Phoenix. Okay.
So the chances of us bumping into each other are like zero. And yet I've had the chance to sit down and speak with people like yourself, like Brian, like Schwarzenegger, politicians, actors, best-selling authors, movers and shakers of business. I, like you, have a curious mind. And there is something exhilarating about meeting somebody and just without, like you said, with no real agenda other than asking a few questions, getting to know each other. And I've gotten to literally meet and get to know tens of thousands of people. Some of them have become my friends, but what a great, great way to get to know the world around you, just having these conversations.
Right, and I think the point that we wanted to make with A Curious Mind is that you don't need a radio show, and you don't really need an excuse. I mean, that's when Brian was first starting out as a reporter, the same goes for me, if you just say to people, hey, I'm Charles, you know, what do you do here? You'd be surprised what you learn. Sure, maybe 1 out of 10 people is going to be grumpy and like, what are you, you know. But most people are happy to meet you and happy to tell you, you know, what they do. And so you don't even need the excuse of being a journalist or a radio host to ask questions about the world. And I think, I mean, one of the points we made in the book that I think is powerful and often overlooked is people often at home fall into routine. You know,
yes.
You ask your kids, how was school today? They say, fine, that's the end of the conversation. But part of being curious is a little bit of persistence. And also it's asking questions a little different way so you get a little different response and open up the conversation. How is school? Fine is the classic exchange. I've had it 1,000 times with my kids. But if you say, hey, I remember you had a biology test today. How did that go? Yeah, you can get the same answer, fine. But you're probably not going to get the same answer. You know, and then all of a sudden the conversation's underway. And the same is true of your spouse. You know, it's easy to fall into. I mean, one of the things we really appreciated and that both Brian and I tested out in the course of working on the book is it's easy to fall into a rut, even with the people closest to you, to not actually
yes.
be genuinely curious about what your husband or wife experienced at work today or, you know, how the project is going or whether they're feeling excited or disappointed. And so it's good to actually be curious about the people closest to you because that's a way of keeping – that's what you were when you were courting, you know?
Well,
that's
and I'm
what,
glad you brought that up. I'm glad you said that because so many of us stop courting, right, after a year or so after that relationship, right? In the very beginning of the relationship, the person that you're courting will say, hey, will you take out the trash? And it's like, yes, I will. I'll be glad to take out the trash. Anything else I can do for you? I love you so much. You're so fantastic. You know, a year later, 10 years later, whatever it is, we take out the trash. It's like, really? You want me to take out the trash? What am I, your janitor? And we take each other for granted. We stop asking questions. We stop listening. And I love the fact that again, a curious mind reignites that curiosity, as you just said, with the people that you know the most, the people that you've already that you maybe are taking for granted. Now's the time to reignite that relationship by again having a curious mind, a really curious mind.
Right, and it's, again, as with people you work with or who are in the business you're in or in the adjacent business, it's all about the tone. You don't want to cross examine your wife when she gets home from. I'm going to be curious about my wife now. Okay, what did you do? What did you do before lunch? What did you do at lunch? No, but you want did that response from your boss give you confidence? Did it make you feel uncomfortable? You know, you want to ask kind of leading questions that suggest that you care about the answer and that you're paying attention not just to the mechanics, but to the, you know, the with people close to you, to the emotional responses of what's going on. And I was so struck by, a lot of the gap that we in the U.S. especially feel between parents and teenagers, the sort of routine that people feel like they fall into with their husbands or wives or partners, a lot of that comes from literally a certain laziness. And the laziness is the unwillingness to ask a slightly more emotionally impactful question and listen to the – if you say to your wife, Susan said that to you, were you all right with that? Did that make you uncomfortable? You're going to get a different answer than fine. But you have to be willing to take the answer, you know. You do have to you have to live with the consequences. And so the laziness is both in the willingness to ask the question and in being willing to invest the emotional energy in the answer. But that's where the adventure comes from. That's where the sense of discovery comes from again.
Yes, absolutely. So, okay, so kind of put this together, the pieces together, because you mentioned, you know, Brian is immersed in Hollywood. He's a producer there, and you're a reporter. And how did you guys connect? Are you guys childhood friends, or how did this connection happen?
Oh, my goodness. We in many ways, we could not be more different people. It was fun to get a little taste of his world. We are published by the same publishing house. My water book is published by Simon & Schuster, and my book about going to the moon will be published by Simon & Schuster. And Simon & Schuster was Brian's publisher for A Curious Mind. And the truth is that a guy as busy as Brian Grazer is not going to sit down for 3 hours a day for two years and you know, turn off the internet and turn off the phone and tell the assistants not to bother him and write his own book. So they were looking for somebody to partner with him. And I'm not the co-author type. There are people who actually do that brilliantly and do it for a living. But Brian and I met. I said I wasn't going to consider partnering up with him without us meeting any more than he would hire the director of Apollo 13 without, you know, meeting that person. I was in L.A. to talk about water, in fact, and I went to see Brian. And we sat down, and I said to him, why do you – I knew about the curiosity conversations, and I said, but why do you want to write a book about curiosity? Why would anybody care what your experience has been? You're a movie producer. The movies are great. That's the result of your curiosity. Why are we going beyond that? And here's what he said to me. He said, I think curiosity has this incredible power to make people's lives better, to give you a more exciting professional life, to give you a more exciting, you know, life outside of work. What is it like to go river rafting? What's Alaska look like? What's the difference between car camping and backpack camping? Whatever, you know, there's a million ways of exploring the world. And he said, and also, you know, in terms of the people closest to you. And he said, what I love about curiosity is, you don't need a Harvard degree. You don't need McKinsey and Company consultants to come in and tell you what to do. You don't need anything. You just need to ask questions. It's the most democratic. You don't need a creativity course, you know, 10 weeks, Tuesdays and Thursdays after work. All you need to do is remind yourself how powerful it is to ask questions and listen to the answers, and then have that, whatever you learn, as your own capital, something you can do something with whenever you need it. He said, so what I so appreciate about curiosity is it's incredibly democratic. Anybody can use it. Nobody can tell me I can't use it. Nobody can tell me I need this degree or this kind of training. And you know what? At that moment, I mean, lots of logistics had to be worked out, but at that moment he had me, because he's exactly right. There are lots of things in the world that would be great, but not everybody has a high-speed internet connection. Not everybody has an Ivy League degree or the connections that come with it. You know, you interviewed a wonderful woman about –
not everybody's an award-winning journalist, or not everybody's an award-winning producer, or has millions of dollars. But I love that idea. I love that idea that everybody can ask questions.
Exactly. Everybody can be curious, and it's okay to say, here's a $10 book that reminds you all the – I mean, one of the things we did was we envisioned this spectrum of curiosity, like the spectrum in the – like the colors of light, you know. There is the curiosity of a prosecutor. There is the curiosity of a Labrador retriever. But there's also the curiosity of a hairdresser who engages you when you sit down and you know, wants to – talk about your day and understand where you're coming from, and also, by the way, how you want to look when the haircut's done. There's the curiosity of a really good doctor who's not like a homicide detective who understands that maybe there's a mystery about why this blood test says this, that blood test says that, and you feel this way, and that doctor is determined that she is going to get to the bottom of it. And so we sort of created this spectrum of curiosity. And so I think the idea that that you can remind people of the power and the value of curiosity is in and of itself very powerful. But Brian's central notion that it is the easiest, least expensive tool that can do the most to improve your life. You know, if the toilet's leaking, if your knee isn't working right, if your relationship doesn't feel as connected and satisfying as you'd like it to be, curiosity can help you tackle any of those problems and help you make them better. And you don't have to go hire somebody at $90 an hour to do.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Charles, we're out of time. I'd love to bring you back when you're done with your next book that has to do with the space program. Love to bring have you back talk about that as well. It's been a pleasure. I love the energy that you and Brian have for curiosity. Again, the book is A Curious Mind, The Secret to a Bigger Life by Brian Grazier and Charles Fishman. Charles Fishman, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks for having me, and yes, have me back, and we'll talk about how you get to the moon.
All righty, love it. Good stuff there from Charles Fishman on curiosity. Again, the book, and it's a great read. It is a fun book. It is just amazing. And what I like about this book is that, as Charles said, there's a couple of CIA-type operatives that are become part of the book. And Brian talks about the fact that they, you know, how they behaved and how weird they were to and stuff like that. So anyway, it's a great book. It's got a lot of world leaders in it. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.